Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Tuesday, March 5th. We are here live. It is time for the Power Hour. I've got the team from Pittsburgh Power today, minus Bruce. Bruce is traveling. Pete and Leroy are here to do the heavy lifting. I'll press some buttons and try to be funny once in a while. We'll take your calls and questions. Phone lines are open if you have any maintenance-related calls. Engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, emissions, electronics. Jump in and give us a call. We've got an answer. Can't promise it'll be right, but we'll give it our best shot. All right, let's find out what Pete and Leroy are doing this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we got to get Bruce on board here. I do not remember approving another day off for him.
No, I think you need to talk to him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's my paycheck, so I got to watch what I say, but I think you have a little more pull than I do.
Yeah.
His breaks, I mean, there's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I know.
We're
going to have a talk, too, because yesterday he knows if he calls me, I probably won't answer the phone because I never answer my phone. So he texted me yesterday and said, can you call me about the CMC? So I immediately stopped what I was doing and I called him and his phone wasn't even on.
Oh, that's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, his phone wasn't even on. So
I was actually going to bring that up to you. For one of the things you could add to your CMC, about especially on the business side, is to make sure you have a voicemail set up and it's not full. You wouldn't believe how many people we call back and the voicemail is full. They don't have voicemail set up. And I don't mind so much. Like, okay, you missed us. That's not much I can do there. It's when they call back pissy because
right.
No one called them back.
Right.
And like, yes, we did. But your voicemail. Oh, then they start backstepping. And I don't know how your voicemail fills up, because when I get a voicemail, I listen to it and generally delete them.
Right. And don't voicemail, but I don't know how much one holds today. I don't think mine's ever been full. It might be now, because it's been a while since I looked. Like I said, I don't answer my phone most of the time. But and I will tell you, you guys, first off, it's pretty rare that you get voicemail when you call you guys anyway. There's so many people that will get on the phone and help you and answer your questions. But once in a while, of course, we're busy. It goes to voicemail. You guys are also really good at calling people back.
We try our best.
Yeah, it is. I've seen it in action, and, if you leave a message, you will get a call back. And it's usually within 24 hours, usually that business day, but 24 hours, I've seen it. So, yeah, you guys are really good at that.
Yeah, and within 24 hours is acceptable. We had a customer yesterday pull up the phones over and wanting an oil sample and just kept calling and calling multiple people, and it turned into a big cluster over nothing. Just call, leave a message, someone will get back to you.
Yeah.
And it was a sample. It wasn't like, hey, you just worked on my truck and I'm broke down. Yeah, you need immediate assistance. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
We understand that. But,
right.
You know, oil sample, it's not going to get to you any sooner if I talk to you at 10 a.m. or 2 p.m. UPS doesn't pick up till 3:30 or so. So
right.
Not getting there any sooner.
Good point.
Faster. So, but Leroy is with us today, but he's on a road test. A customer came in a little bit late, and Leroy needs to go on a road test, so he will be joining us in a little bit.
I was wondering if he was in the background just sleeping again.
No, not yet. Well, he might be in a truck sleeping.
He could be. He might be back in the sleeper, right? Is that where he does the road tests from back there?
I'll have to ask him that.
That's right. Yeah, he lays back there with headphones on, just telling somebody, well, I'm listening to the engine. I'm the engine whisperer.
Yep. He has a laptop with his eyes closed.
That's right.
We'll have to question him about that, too.
Yeah.
He probably knows.
All right. So what's going on in your world this week?
Okay, so what I was going to talk about was, we get a lot of calls from people, and their good questions would be, and it's, whether do I keep my old truck or not? And do I put money into it, or do I buy a new one? And there's a lot of factors, and that's a tough question for us to answer. you know, we don't know your financial situation.
Hey, Pete.
Yes.
Let me address that. It is an impossible question for anybody to answer if they don't have detailed bookkeeping, and we have to be able to dig into tax returns and bookkeeping records. And if I can't do that, if they don't have a good record-keeping system like profit gauges, where I can just look at it, see what their cost per mile, because you said there are many factors here. We have the truck payment itself we have to factor in, insurance changes when we get a new truck, we have to factor that in. Those two, we can know right down to the penny. We can go, you know, figure out how much we want to spend on a truck. And within 30 minutes, I can tell you what your costs are going to be for the truck and insurance, right down to the penny. Then fuel mileage is going to change, our number one expense, but we can't guarantee what that number is going to be. We can make some pretty good predictions, but there's always a risk that something just goes wrong with that. Every once in a while, you get a truck where you look at it and go, that thing should be getting 9.5 miles to the gallon, and it's getting 7.5 for some reason. And there's always that risk, whether you buy brand new or used. It's actually less risk if you buy used, because we can pull the ECM report and actually see it now. There's some history there we can look at. Then our next biggest cost is also affected maintenance. And again, we can't predict that 100%. We can make some guesses and we'll be pretty close. But those are at least four things that are going to be impacted. We could also say that this could change downtime one way or the other, and we can't predict which way. That's another factor. So you're right. There are a lot of factors here. And if you have all of the numbers accurate and up to date right in front of you, it is still a tough call. But if somebody just says to you, should I trade this or not, and you don't have any of those numbers, you'd be insane to try to answer that question.
Right. And I think a lot of it is, especially when it comes up time for a rebuild, I just priced out an in-frame for a Detroit, which has been very affordable to work on. It's almost when it's especially if it's a glider and it's a newer truck, which, okay, the truck's in good shape and the engine needs gone through. They were pretty affordable to work on, and the prices are going up on them. And I think a lot of people get spooked a little bit with price of a rebuild.
Give us a rough price on a rebuild, and let's use a Series 60 because that is one of the cheapest engines to rebuild. What would it cost us today?
Okay, so I just did an estimate. I'm going to pull that up right now so it'll be right in front of me. Now, on this 20, it was a basic in-frame, so it's a 2016 glider with a reman engine in it. So, which is good because generally the Detroit reman engines were better than some of the
right
people themselves.
Right.
Now, we're doing one step further. So we do the check for codes, boost test. We do the in-frame, a dyno run, a road test. Now, in this case, we're also doing the rear structure. So we got to pull the transmission out.
Okay.
Leaking there. So not counting taxes, because some guys pay tax, some don't. We're just under $28,500 for that now.
The problem I have here.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is a glider, so it is a newer chassis, so I'm a little more inclined to maybe think about it. If this were a 99 or an 01, and the price would still be the same, it's still going to be roughly $30,000. There's no way I could justify that today. Here's the other thing we have to remember about this. This changes all the time. Not only do our numbers matter, but what is going on in the marketplace matters, and the cost of repairs is going up. The cost of used trucks is dropping to the bottom. For $30,000, I can go buy like a 2018 truck today. With 500,000 or 600,000 miles, it's all new technology. I could get 9.5 miles to the gallon out of it. How can I justify rebuilding a 25-year-old truck now?
Right. Yeah, especially with the older trucks, and if they're running in an environment that uses a lot of salt, like we do in the Northeast, the trucks themselves aren't always in the best of shape.
Right.
And neglected. A lot of times they are neglected. Now, again, this case, the 16 glider makes it a lot easier to accept that because of what it is.
Yes.
The fuel mileage is good. Yes, you could get something that's another mile or mile and a half to the gallon better, but 30,000 is still a lot cheaper than, well, unless you're buying a new one, which is getting terribly high. But like I said, you said that the used trucks are finally coming down some.
The other day, I saw a very, very well-specced Volvo. Now, it had 800,000 miles on it. But let's think about that. These trucks should easily go 1.3, 1.4 million miles. They're not even burning oil at that point half the time anymore. So we have, let's call it 600,000 miles on this before we'd have to do anything major. I could get that truck for $15,000. And it's a 9 mile per gallon truck all day long. With some modifications and somebody driving it right, it could be a 10 mile per gallon truck in some operations for $15,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you justify spending $30,000 on a 25 year old truck?
Right. Right. And a few exceptions would be, hey, am I going to be in it for a couple more years? I really like the truck. I mean, some people just like their truck.
That one is the real true exception that you just decide, I don't want a new truck. I've had this truck a long time. I know it. I like it. It is fuel efficient. The maintenance costs have been good. It's just time to do an in-frame. Okay, I get that. That makes sense. We have to think about the short term, because I was going to say the same thing about the $15,000 truck. Because somebody might argue, okay, you're going to get 600,000 miles out of that truck, but I'm going to get a million if I do an in-frame. Well, okay. Are you going to keep this truck another million miles, really? If you are, okay, we could think about it, but it'd be a whole lot easier to put out 15,000 right now for short term rather than 30.
Yeah, yep.
It's getting now, and again, we have to remember business is constantly changing. Answers we gave 2 years ago, we might give a completely different answer now because the market has shifted so much. And that's what we have to pay attention to. Last year, the year before, used truck prices were so ridiculous, I would have spent $40,000 to rebuild the one I had.
Yeah, because it made sense.
Right. Right. We've gone from two extremes on this question. We were at an extreme high. I had never seen trucks selling for that, used trucks. Stupid prices. Now we're about to hit an extreme low. I'm starting to look at some of these trucks. I can't believe they have to sell that thing that cheap.
And not only were they high, but they stayed high for a long period of time.
Yeah, they did.
I think you and I thought prices were going to go down with all these trucking companies going under. There should be a bunch of trucks out there.
It took a while.
Could be bought. Yeah, way longer than I expected.
Yeah.
I never thought it would be this long. Even as the economy slowed,
right,
the price of used weren't dropping much.
Right.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah, and it happened fast. They weren't budging, and then all of a sudden, the first time the prices moved, they moved like 30% down. They dropped really fast, and then they did it again. And I thought we were at the bottom about 6 months ago, but we're not. I still see those prices dropping.
I had one customer that has, I think the truck's an 05, 07, so it's an older truck, having some issues with it, and he's going to park it and go drive for somebody. He said, the economy's not good enough for me to put money into it.
Yep.
And I'm going to park a little bit, and as things pick up, I'll get the truck fixed and get back into being an owner-operator again.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. He's willing to think that way.
Absolutely. Right, right.
There's some options, and not just run it into the ground and be done with it, and then you're in a hole in your stock.
Well, when we were at the peak of those truck prices, when every time I looked at what somebody just paid for a used truck, I just would just shake my head and think, what are you thinking? You can't afford to buy a truck at this price. You just can't. I mean, I told people, you would be better off renting a truck for 4 or 5 months. And waiting, if you absolutely have to have a truck right now, yours just, died, rent one, because the minute you buy that overpriced truck, you can never take that mistake back, ever. I mean, if you decide tomorrow, you're probably going to get screwed. And 6 months from now, you are stuck with this overpriced truck for a very long time. And it's just a bad idea. I said the opposite. I actually, talk about crazy thinking. I said, you know what? If I were a 10-truck fleet right now, other than the drivers, because you got to think about the drivers in a situation like this. I said I could make a financial argument where it would make sense right now to sell all 10 of your trucks and take a year off and then come back and buy 10 more trucks when the market drops. And I did the math. The numbers were so extreme, it actually made sense.
You know, if these people that, bought these trucks, and a lot of them were buying trucks when you were telling them not to, and they're already behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of them are out of business. I mean, those are some of the first people that went out of business. There was no way. And here's the thing. Just because they were buying really expensive trucks doesn't mean they were buying really efficient trucks. They were just expensive. And if you didn't know how to buy the truck right, spec it right, all those things, not only were you getting killed on the fixed cost of the truck and the insurance, you were getting killed on maintenance and fuel mileage, because it doesn't matter how much you spend on a truck, that doesn't make it efficient.
Right. Right. Yeah, and a lot of people were buying trucks. I know a couple guys called up asking about, they're looking at old cab overs. And the price they were paying for them, like, that makes no sense.
Right.
It just makes, unless you have 10 or 12 trucks making you money and you want a toy and you want to leave the office once a week,
yep.
Hey, go ahead for your life. These guys were going to try to make a living with an older cab over, and nothing against the cab overs, but they were just paying too much for them.
Right.
Yeah, $40,000.
Yeah, that's insane. At one point, those $40,000 trucks could have been bought for $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad it was. Yeah, it was just crazy. Hey, since we're on this topic, because this is the kind of stuff we see with these business cycles, and this cycle was extreme, so we're going to see more extreme numbers all around. We were way up high on freight rates for a long time. Truck prices were through the roof. Now it's the opposite. I was just waiting for this to happen, and I woke up this morning and I saw it. There are a couple groups in the owner-operator world, associations, and I've been feuding with them because they post some of the most ridiculous stuff, and I've talked about them several times. So we have the SBTC, Small Business Transportation Coalition, I think is what it stands for. That's James Lamb's group. Every time I talk about him, I fully expect I'll get a letter today from his attorney. Every time I talk about him, I do. And the NOOA, the National Owner Operator Association. Guess what they're calling for now?
What's that?
I knew this was coming. I was just waiting for it. It happens every down cycle. I'm shocked, though, that we even have to talk about this kind of stuff in the owner-operator world. Here's their headline. The SBTC is working with NOOA to effect a national minimum freight rate. Do these people understand how socialistic and communistic that is? There's only one group or organization that could set a national minimum freight rate. And who is it? It's the government. Nobody else could do this. It would have to be a law. Are these guys idiots? Do they even understand what they're asking for?
They don't. That's the problem.
Do they understand that in a free market, there would never, ever be something like a government-mandated rate? That's stuff they do in China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to do us any good.
And if these groups want to lobby the government for a minimum rate, what would then stop the shippers from lobbying the government for a maximum rate?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just not going to work. Hey,
and
just walk to my office.
Here's the other couple other points. Who would this benefit more, mega carriers or owner-operators? by far mega carriers, they have a hard time controlling their costs. Their cost that they put out last year, the cost for a mega carrier to run a truck 1 mile was $2.28 a mile. That's insane. An owner-operator can do it for half of that. We've shown it. We've proven it. So who now benefits more from that minimum rate? This supports the mega carriers. They now can run their trucks all day long, even if they're not efficient, and all they need to do is make 2 or 3 cents a mile, and they'll stay in business.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, they have to manage.
Yeah. So it's the mega carriers that actually benefit from a law like this. And here's the other thing that happens. Now you will see investors out there that understand numbers. They don't even need to understand trucking. As long as they understand numbers, you will see investors start putting trucks into the market for that minimum rate. You don't even have to work for it. You just put together a business plan that says, hey, look, we can run just slightly above that minimum rate or below it with our expenses, and we can make 3 or 4 cents a mile. And if we put enough trucks on the road, we can make money doing this.
It's just
awful. Now, then the other thing you have to ask everybody, look, what makes trucking so special? If we get some sort of guaranteed minimum rate in business, what about restaurants? They're struggling. They're going out of business. Don't they need a minimum rate? Don't we need a $10 cheeseburger? You can't charge any less.
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely snowball. It would definitely snowball.
Yeah.
And then why be in business then?
Exactly. The only people that think like this are people who don't know how to compete in a free market. I just looked up. We lost our calls.
Yeah, and you're still breaking up quite a bit, Kevin.
We have run into an audio problem that somehow keeps getting worse, and we can't fix it. Until we get our software out, I've tried everything. I've wasted so much time, so many hours on this. It's making me crazy. Is it really bad right now? Are you having a hard time understanding me?
I am. Now, Leroy just came in my office, and he said on the app it sounds fine.
No, that's the way it always is. And we've identified why. And it's a weird hardware-software issue that everybody looks at me and says, that's not even possible. That can't be happening. And I said, oh, I can promise you it's happening. My headset is going directly to the app, so that's why my audio is so good. For some reason, the audio that connects to this phone system is being picked up by my laptop mic, and it breaks up and it fades in and out and it does all kinds of weird stuff. It should never be able to do that. It shouldn't be able to grab an audio signal from two different sources like that, and yet it is. So hopefully we get our software up and running here soon. Since we don't have any calls right now, and maybe the callers that were on the line were having a hard time understanding me, that's why they hung up, I may try reconnecting one more time. If you've got some calls, jump in here, because if not, we may just call this today. I will take a couple minutes and try to reconnect. You can dial in 855-950-3835. I will be right back. All right, we are back again. I think I may have another clue on what's going on. If I connect to the phone system but I don't start the live show, my audio is perfect on the phone system. Seems to be once I start the live show. So, Pete, did anything change when I started the live show?
Right now, you're good.
Oh, well, good. Let's go with that.
So good.
Let's go with that. All right, is Leroy there?
He is.
Leroy, good morning. Hey, we need phone calls. We had a bunch. They dropped off. I don't know what. Probably because they couldn't understand me when they heard me on the phone system. So redial, or we might wrap this up early today, 855-950-3835. Sounds like we've got all our audio issues worked out. Jump in and join us. Leroy, good morning.
Good morning.
Anything exciting happen on your road test?
Seems like the inlet knock sensor was actually broken in a favorable way for him. It was causing him with a DD13 to get 1,800 miles per gallon on diff.
Wow. Gotta love that.
It is practically but not stuck in range on the inlet knock sensor at a really high number, and the outlet is working. So then it looks like his conversion efficiency is 98% or better all the time, because the system thinks that, you know, it coming out of the engine is a lot, and then coming out of the tailpipe is next to nothing, when what's going on is the inlet sensor is broken, making the system think that it's better than it is. So it's great right now, but, you know, it may break and then leave them stranded at some point. So I said, you should probably fix that. It's really nice right now, but you probably get that fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably better off to take care of that. What else you got going on this week?
I got a little bit of feedback from the Volvo tune that I did, I guess, 2 weeks ago now, because I was out last week. He sent me an email. Well, I guess I sent him an email first. He sent me an email back. He says it's better throttle response, easier takeoff, seems to run smoother, climbs hills easier, and he's guessing it gained about a tenth or two on fuel economy, which is nice, but it's about expected. I usually say a couple of tenths, but it's always encouraging, especially because the Volvo stuff's fairly new. That we're going in the right direction.
Hey, speaking of which, I know you're working on Volvo tunes now. International is just now starting to deliver their new drivetrain. Some fleet got 20 of them or so yesterday. This is going to be very, very similar to the Volvo Mac. One of the high-level executives left Volvo and went over to try to save International. And this new drivetrain looks good. It's got that. I know you, Joel, told me you two have been talking about the stroke and the rod length and, you know, side loading the piston and all those issues. So I'm glad you're working on that. This is that same kind of configuration with the longer rods, shorter stroke that allows us to really downspeed. And they're now also building their own transmissions and differentials to go with this drivetrain. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah. We might have another option.
Yeah, I've been excited for the S13 really since it came out. The even higher compression ratio, the no EGR. I think this is really a big step forward. I'm kind of curious to see what the DEF consumption looks like, or how reliable that new SCR, the new high temp SCR is. That's going to be something we're going to have to figure out in years to come, but I feel pretty excited for it.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it. So I hope we start finding some people with one. Or you know what I was shocked about, though? So I'm surprised International is still in business after what they've been through with the emissions. They have screwed up this whole emission thing so bad from the very beginning. They've been through engine after engine that just doesn't work in the real world. And they're still here, and this looks like they might have finally figured it out. But here's the statement they made about this when they released it. This is the last internal combustion engine they're working on.
Really?
They made that statement. I was shocked. Especially if they would have made that statement 3 years ago, it wouldn't have surprised me. When everybody electric was going to take over everything and it's going to save the world. But now, come on, we're seeing a lot of pushback on electric, a lot, that we're just not ready for it. This is not going to happen right now. And for them at this point to say, this is the last internal combustion engine we're going to work on.
Is that because of the electric push, or is it because they feel like they have a good platform?
No, they're moving to electric.
Boy. Oh, boy.
I know.
If they first screw up with the emissions, they would maybe fall everyone off.
Right.
Yeah. If you get a hydrogen, it makes it even worse. So that, you know, at least it's not hydrogen. So
yeah, right.
Someone's using their head there, I guess.
I'm sensing you're not an International fan, Pete.
Not really. Really?
Not terribly against them, just the blunders they made.
I like their trucks.
I think we would have caught the blunders.
Well, and Pete, I'm with you. There was a time, this would have been like all through the early 90s, all I ran was internationals. And I really liked them. They were good, solid work trucks. Nothing flashy. They held up well. I had a good dealer where I was, so that's always important. I liked the internationals that I had for a long time, but boy, there was about 20 years where there's no way I would buy one. They were just screwing up one thing after another.
Yeah. Or I'd buy an international truck with something else in it, but yeah.
Yeah, they never really built an on-highway engine, and once they tried, they screwed it all up. Now, they're mid-sized trucks, class 4, 5, 6, in that range. Those engines were excellent. Those are great engines.
Yeah, what was it, 466? They were pretty popular.
They're popular, but I've never heard anybody say they like them.
Well, what else?
They're out there.
Yeah, and they're out there because there isn't any other choice that's any better. That was the problem.
You get like an Isuzu or a Tiny Mac, maybe, but
yeah,
I would never buy an Isuzu.
Well, and then you got to deal with service. You know, again, once an engine becomes so popular, then you have a lot more people that know how to work on them.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll see. I really do hope that this engine and drivetrain turns out to be a good one, so we've got another option.
Yeah, and, you know, the more options, the better chance of the other OEMs maybe stepping up and making some changes. Hey, this looks like this is going to work. Maybe we need to relook at how we're doing things.
Exactly. Hey, we've got some calls, so let's grab them, make sure our phones are working. Let's get started in Ohio. Bob, welcome.
How are you doing today, guys?
Good. What can we help you with?
Your audio when we're on hold is still breaking up quite immensely. At least it is on mine.
Yeah. Hopefully we can muddle through the show, and I'm just going to have to lock the programmers in a closet and tell them they can't come out until they get me some software.
There you go. No, just tell it the equipment it can't screw up until we get it fixed.
That's right.
And that's brings me to two questions. One, Pete knows who I am. I'm the one with a 2005 that's parked it and driving a company truck. The question to Leroy is, does the scan gauge KR work on the S13? Because I can't get what appears to be true numbers out of it.
On the S13?
Yes.
Like
I'm in a 2024 International right now. And
oh, wow.
The S13...
But we're just talking about that, and I'm wondering if we're ever going to get to talk to somebody with one on our first call. You have one. Here's the problem. We're not going to be able to answer your question about the scan gauge until we can get our hands on one of these trucks and try it.
Oh, okay. But I just kind of wondered because, like, I get weird boost numbers. I get weird horsepower numbers.
Now,
9 yards.
There are a couple settings in there where you can... So, hey, Leroy, I don't know why I just drew a blank on this. What are the two protocols that it could be?
It's either J1939 or 1708, but a 2024 have J1939. The next thing, is it a 250K baud rate or is it a 500K baud rate? My guess is it's 500K. I don't know if that's a setting within the scan gauge, but... That may be
so the two protocols, it will work on either one of them, but you will get false readings if you're on the wrong one. So if you can go in and change that one setting, that may be all it takes.
Okay. And the other question is we did find part of the problem.
Okay.
We went in and did the injector, a cutout test, like you had suggested, and Ryan suggested doing the actuators. We found the front bank of actuators was not running correctly or given enough. Because when we did a cutout test, 4, 5, and 6 would run on the one cylinder like it should. 1, 2, and 3, the engine would actually die.
Okay.
So we figured out that the common factor for the front bank was an actuator. However, and we went and replaced the actuator, took it for a test drive. It actually rode pretty good without a wagon behind it. I left out on Sunday
Grabbed a hold of a trailer and got it down the road, probably, I don't know, maybe about 50 miles, and got my load, turned around, went back home, switched out trucks, because this is, it came back again. I'm dead in power. The scan gauge is now showing that I make full horsepower, according to your programs, but I just don't have the pulling power, and when I'm at it idle, it sounds like it's loping or like I got a big cam in there, you know, on the gas engine. And I'm still not building pyrometer temp and boost. So should I go back into doing the fuel lines, even though that test showed good?
Yeah, I don't think the fuel lines would have much to do with this.
Well, I'm kind of out of the loop on what's the story.
It's a 571 ISX.
870. Know,
or 870, I'm sorry, 870, EGR.
And what's it do or not do? Just runs poorly?
It runs poorly. Just, yeah, you got the program in it, and GR tuned the program a little bit, but we just couldn't get power out of it. And it started like a fuel filter was going bad. So I replaced the fuel filters, and then that's led us to other things. And
we changed
all the filters.
Yep.
And I've actually changed the primary filter a couple times because I thought, well, maybe I got a bad batch of fuel, and that's actually what's screwing me up.
And it just suddenly started doing this?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago.
It was okay, and then all of a sudden you just felt like it's out of power.
Yeah.
Does it like sound like it's like running out of fuel, like you're getting some misfires, really low power, or?
What, now, right now at idle, yes.
Well, how about like while you're trying to drive it?
Trying to drive it, I just don't have any power. The program that you had put in it and Ethan had put in it was very responsive with 44,000 pounds. And now when I accelerate, I'm back to driving like a 400. It just it'll gain speed, but it's not really responsive, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like it's a fueling supply issue. Usually, a fuel supply issue, you're gonna feel it like wanting to break up. Like it's starving for fuel under load. And you said you replaced an actuator. Which one did you replace?
The front bank.
The timing and fueling actuator, or?
No, just the fueling.
Just the fueling actuator. And you said you did a cutout test.
Yes.
And what was the results?
We did the original cutout test. 4, 5, and 6 would idle on single cylinder. 1, 2, and 3, the engine would want to die. So that led us to the actuator.
Mm-hmm.
We replaced the actuator. We did a cutout test again. We thought we found the problem, and because it passed the actual, you know, it passed the cutout test on that because it would run. And now the problem has come back.
Mm-hmm. Have you done any sort of the bubble test? Have you done that one yet?
No.
Okay. Yeah, because to me, I mean, obviously, without looking at it, the two things that come to mind is either an injector issue or it's one of the check valves, O-rings or something in the ISFM is that there's an issue within that. It's kind of on these red motors with that integrated fuel system. It's kind of hard to track down the issue within that ISFM, but
okay.
Yeah, that's I fixed a couple that way where they would do like the terrible idle, the low power. Usually when it's just low power and not a terrible idle, it's injector. Otherwise, it's something within that whole brick. I think you can order the whole brick and kit and caboodle with all the O-rings, check valves, and all that and replace it. Or if you have, like, a used one, like if you know, that's what we have. We have that 870 out back. Remember the Nagy truck,
mm-hmm.
that dump truck?
Yeah.
With all
yeah.
The, we just took the whole integrated fuel system off the one out back and just moved it over, and it fixed the issue.
Knew what we need to change.
We couldn't find which O-ring or which check valve inside of that thing. I mean, there's so many little pieces inside of it. It was easier just to buy the whole kit and replace it.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like that's probably your issue. I mean, if you've already
when I'm driving down the road, it actually drives pretty good. The scan gauge is showing that I'm making a horsepower when I put it, you know, when I drop the extra gear and give it the high RPMs.
Right.
Because my best pulling power was like 1150, 1250, somewhere right down in there.
Yeah, this is all assuming that, yeah, the ECM is not in any sort of D rate and it's commanding the fueling that it's supposed to.
No, the codes, we pulled all the codes out of it. There's nothing in there that shows any kind of D-rate. Pete suggested switching computers, and I went to the bunk and grabbed one and tried that. That didn't work. The following morning, I tried to start the truck. It wouldn't start, so I have been getting a crankshaft sensor and a camshaft sensor, but those are on nationwide back order right now, and nobody can give me an idea when they're coming in.
Yeah, I mean, there are some fueling limitations that can happen without check engine lights, so that just keep that in mind as well.
Okay. Now, that's what I'm trying to do, you know, in between driving a company truck now and trying to get mine back on road, because I miss mine.
I don't want to see somebody buy a fuel system that integrated. You know what part I'm talking about with the integrated fuel system?
I think so.
So, you know that big flat brick piece that the actuators bolt to?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the ISF or IFSM. I can never remember the acronym, but that's the whole integrated fuel system. That's the part I'm talking about.
The one that costs like about $7,000 to replace.
I don't think it was $7,000.
Okay. But that's not the fuel pump then.
It's not the fuel pump, no.
Okay. Yeah, you're talking about the one that's about a foot long and or 18 inches long and like 12 inches high.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, it's the piece that the actuators bolt to.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, I mean, if you're near like a remote turner, we can make sure that it's going to the fueling that it's supposed to and that you don't have any sort of, I'll use quote, silent D-rates, any sort of turbo speed D-rates, exhaust pressure D-rates, pyrometer temperature, things that can limit the fueling without throwing a check engine light. Let's make sure there's none of that before you would want to replace that whole thing. I would hate to see that happen for you.
Yeah. Well, I've thrown a lot of money at this, and like I told Pete, last year was not a good year for me between several surgeries and other things, and I just decided to park the truck for now and try building back up my income a little bit.
Right.
Try to figure this out on the cheap side.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, thank you much for your time and your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Hey, Pete, Leroy.
Mm-hmm.
Reach over and grab your tinfoil hat and put it on.
Okay.
You guys ready?
You got them in my hat. I'm ready.
What are the odds that in the craziest election cycle ever, with all the crazy stuff going on in elections, that on Super Tuesday, both Facebook and Instagram have worldwide outages? Millions of people can't get onto Facebook or Instagram right now.
Would it be bad if I'm on Instagram right now?
Are you? Because everybody is reporting they are massive shutdowns.
Yeah, I'm not on either, so I wasn't aware of that.
I don't use either, so I wasn't. But all over Twitter, people are saying I can't log into my Facebook or Instagram, and I do see now it is breaking news. The media is reporting it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, apparently I'm not a threat, so they know I don't post anything, so I just put memes. Oh, I'm fairly safe.
All right. We can take our tinfoil hats off for a while then. We're safe, maybe. All right. Let's go to Iowa. Ryan, welcome. Hey, by the way, this is our last phone call on the board. I'm sure that that little fiasco disaster when I had to restart 17 times has chased our listeners away. So if you want to get in, now would be the time. Jump in. 855-950-3835. Brian, what can we help you with today?
Hey, good morning, Kevin. You didn't chase me away.
Good.
I'm here. Just sent over an oil sample. Wondering if Angie got that to you.
Yeah, I've got it here. My biggest concern is actually something they didn't even flag.
Okay.
It's your silicon. It's been, it's coming down, which I wonder if we go back to when it was 16, which was back in July of 23, was the engine opened up at some point?
Well, it was a brand new overhaul. If you look at the miles, the unit miles and the lube time, I ran it like 7,000 miles and then did my first oil change.
Okay.
And then started doing sampling after that. And
Got it.
It does have the fleet air filters in it. So
now that that pattern now makes sense to me, and I'm not worried about it. Because that was, I mean, this is almost the original oil after an in-frame with 90-some thousand miles on it. So, and the silicon has come down every sample. So that tells us there really isn't dirt getting in. It was in there, and we're working. It's working its way out. So I'm not worried about that. The one thing they flag that might freak some people out is the copper, but you've never had lead. So this copper is coming from an oil cooler or something else that isn't an issue. So really,
it is not an issue?
It's not an issue. No. When
okay.
So there's really two places in an engine, I guess we could say three, that you could get copper from, and you want to pay attention to it. It's the bearings themselves in the engine, but you got to go through lead to get to copper. So if you've never seen high lead numbers and there's copper, well, then it didn't come from that bearing. It could potentially be the bearings in the compressor, same way. You'd have to see lead before you would see copper. And those are pretty small bearings. I mean, we don't really get enough wear metals off those to get a big accumulation. The last place you can get copper numbers, and yours are 148, 180, 141. I've seen 1,500. But it's the copper tubing in the oil coolers, and it doesn't even mean that there's anything wrong with it. In fact, almost always there's nothing wrong with it. The copper just leaches out of the tubing into the oil. We never know when it's going to happen or why. Sometimes it does it with a brand new cooler, and you would say, oh, well, that makes sense. But sometimes a new cooler doesn't do that. And then sometimes it happens after a million miles, just out of the blue, it starts leaching copper. But it's there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
So it's almost a really good bet. If you've got copper but you've never had lead, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. So yeah, like I said, maybe I didn't tell you, but a pre-emission Caterpillar engine, a 2WS, did an overhaul, ran it 7,000 miles, changed the oil, then been doing the sampling as close to 20,000 miles as possible, as you can read the time. I actually just started a second entry or a second truck on my fuel gauges for the oil consumption.
Okay.
And I'm going through about a gallon a month. It's averaging about seven. I think the last one was at like 7,100 miles per gallon.
You know, the problem with this number is you're stuck right in the middle. This engine is consuming some oil. You know, we would expect on the older engines that you should, especially today, because some of our newer parts that we can put into these have better machining. And I would expect a 2WS that's rebuilt to maybe use its first gallon at 15,000. So at 7, you're not even getting quite half of what we should. The problem is you got to get down to like 1,500 or 2,000 miles before they'll do it under warranty. So something didn't go back together exactly right. I can't see anything in the oil sample. This is a very clean sample. There's no soot. There's no fuel dilution. Your base holds up well. There's no oxidation or nitration. Everything is pointing to this engine is tuned well and running properly. Eat any thoughts on the oil consumption?
So, I mean, that's not horrible.
Right.
And like I said, Cat comes in Detroit. If you look at their oil consumption sheet, it's a quart every 500 miles before they're doing anything under warranty. So you're nowhere, you know, close to that.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking over the sample, and I was shocked as well to see, you know, when I first saw the numbers up on top and then started looking at soot, fuel dilution, viscosity, all that was surprisingly good.
Right.
Right.
Now, remember when...
I might have maybe not stated this correctly. I think initially I went well over 10,000 miles before I added my first gallon. But then as I got into the sampling and I kept adding, you know, I thought, well, maybe I need to start keeping track of it.
Well, let me also ask you this.
So that's when I started doing it on the ad.
Have you now changed this oil?
No.
Let's change it for a couple reasons. Pete, you know, think about what happened here. He did an in-frame. He went, I think he said 7,000 miles, did an oil change, and has not changed the oil since. So now we're talking about oil that's got 80-some thousand miles on it here. So let's get it changed. Let's get this cleaned up and kind of reset, and then let's see what your consumption is then. And honestly, if it turns out to be 7,000 miles a gallon, there's nothing you can do about it. It just is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
No, I have one question on your oil consumption. So something that can affect oil consumption is water temp. Are you able to maintain water temp, 180 degrees, 190 degrees going down the road?
Yeah. Yep.
If you weren't, say, and you're running down the road at 150, 160, then that might explain some oil consumption issues.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it stays right up there. I'm at 181, just cruising across I-80 right now with the cruise set.
Good. Okay, so that is good. Some of these readings might be, Kevin, coming from, you know, I mean, he only did the one oil change.
Right.
And you're just kind of left over. So generally, we'll do a 2,000 or 3,000 mile oil change on these older engines, and then maybe another one at 10 or 15, and then start our extended drain. So
right.
Some of this might be left over from the rebuild. Now, did you also put an oil cooler in when they did the rebuild?
We did not.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's weird the copper, and the copper wasn't there on that first change, but there was only 7,000 miles on there. There was actually 38. That's pretty high on copper, actually, for 7,000 miles. So that pattern's a little weird. If you look at the silicon, Pete, that's what we see. It was at 16. We would expect that. That's the leftover from breaking the engine open. And then it steadily goes down, 15, 13, 11. That's a good sign. I mean, this is the same oil. So let's change it and reset, and then let's see what happens.
Okay. Yep, and running a synthetic 1540 in it.
I would stick with that. I wouldn't go to a 30 weight on this engine for sure. It's already burning some oil, so we don't want to go to a 30 weight, but I would stick with the synthetic.
Yeah, that was my thought also. Okay.
I mean, look, we could slow down the consumption if you went to a conventional and even threw some Lucas in there. But we'd lose efficiency. Using a little bit of oil on these older engines when you're doing extended drains is not all that bad, because you can actually extend your drains even further because you're putting fresh makeup oil in, let's say, every 7,000 miles. These sometimes are the kind of trucks where I've watched people go 500,000 miles without changing their oil.
Yeah, I agree with that, and that's kind of the mentality that I've taken with it, and it works out well because I don't get home on a regular basis, and I don't like getting my truck worked on at just any shop, so just adding a gallon of oil and bringing everything back up to, you know, putting some fresh life back into it is a pretty easy solution.
Yeah, this isn't a bad thing at all, even if it turns out to be 7,000 miles, not that big of a deal.
Okay, well, if that's all I had.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go. Oh, now we've got calls. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, good morning.
Howdy. Yeah, Facebook's up and operating again, so because I couldn't get in this morning. I thought, oh, what the hell have they done there? So,
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to have to insert a credit card number or something.
Yeah, I know. But it's crazy. We're getting so suspicious of everything now, you know?
Yeah.
Everything is a conspiracy theory until it's proven that it's not.
Yeah. So you're talking about older trucks and new trucks and people buying trucks. Like, I've had my truck for, it's 11 years old last week, but it didn't go on the road till June by the time they cut the roof off it and built the head rack and everything. But I know a guy at the company that I'm leased onto, and he's been in a never-ending lease purchase deal. He's been at lease on for about 8 years, I think, and he's on his fifth truck.
Yeah, that sounds crazy.
Yeah, well, they stuck him in a used truck when he first got there, and it was a Western Star, Detroit, and he'd only been in it for about a month, and it had major engine problems, because it already had three people in it when he got it. He was the fourth guy in it. And he took it to the shop, and they said, oh, it's going to need a new engine. And he says, I'm done. He said, I didn't wear it out. He said, I'm not paying for the engine. He said, I don't. And he told the company, he said, I didn't wear it out. He said, I'm not paying for it. He said, I'll quit right now before I go in the hole. Wait a minute. And they got him a new truck. So he took a new truck, and then he got another new truck, and then another one, and then he went to a different. They were all Western Stars up until his last one. Well, he went from a Cottrell setup to a Law, but he decided he didn't like that. And now he's gone to a day cab Freightliner, which he looks kind of funny in it because he's about 6'5", maybe taller, and he's in this little Freightliner SD day cab that's got the roof cut off it. So he fills it up pretty good. But he's a big guy. If I stand on a step stool, I'm just a little bit taller than he is.
Hey, speaking of that, it just reminded me of something. Yesterday I watched a little video of John Cena. I guess that's how you pronounce the name of the wrestler guy.
Yeah.
Cena. And Shaq trying to get into a smart car together.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that was kind of funny. Yeah.
I could see John Cena fitting in it, but Shaq, I don't know.
Well, Shaq's,
I don't think he can fit.
Shaq's tennis shoe is bigger than the smart car.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they're a manual, but he'd be having trouble working the pedals because his foot would cover both of them at the same time.
Now, actually, the smart car that I had, the German made by Mercedes, and it was actually built over there, and then they had to import it into the U.S. That was actually an auto shift, not an automatic.
Yeah, well, he's.
Or a manual. It was just exactly like we have in our trucks. It had a centrifugal clutch, and it was an auto shift. It was a manual transmission, but the computer shifted it for you.
There you go. So when I was looking at Facebook yesterday, there was on one of the car hauling pages, and it was a VNR Volvo, a 1999, with a 12.7 Detroit in it that had been rebuilt about 60,000 miles ago. It was for sale. It's not the sort of thing you'd want to tow a van with it because it was a flat top.
Yeah.
But it was only $18,500. Well, that'd be a pretty good truck for someone to start with. So I reposted it.
There are some bargains out there, no doubt. Real bargains.
Yeah. Well, if this guy did the rebuild like he said he did, he said he's got papers for it 60,000 miles ago. He's not going to get his money back out of it, but I guess he's done with it. Or maybe he's quit trucking, I don't know. But I'm probably only going to buy one more truck, because I keep them for a long time.
Yeah.
I'll be 60 this year.
Oh, yeah.
So I've had this one for 11 years, and it'll be another year before I get my next new one. So if I keep that for 11 years, hell, I'll be 72. So, but
there you go.
Maybe I'll need another one after that. I don't know. I might be like Harold and just don't know when to quit. Because I think Harold's 75 now. So.
Whew.
He's still out here trucking.
There you go.
Pulling cars every day. So. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. So, but I don't understand guys that trade their truck in every 2 or 3 years just so they have a warranty. I just don't understand that.
Each
to their own.
Every once in a while, once it's really rare, I've been talking about this issue for a long, long time. Every once in a while, I'll get somebody that says, oh, no, I had a warranty and they covered this and I it would have been $30,000. Good. You won the lottery, because that's not how this usually works. I can look at every single new truck I bought, and the warranty was almost worthless. I got almost nothing out of the warranty. And here's the thing. Yeah. One of them I remember clearly, brand new truck, day one, leaking wheel seal. Okay, great. It's under warranty. Take it over to the shop. Couldn't get to it for 2 days. If it wouldn't have been warranty work, I'm sure they would have gotten to it sooner. Shops hate doing warranty work because it doesn't pay much. The OEM tells them, we don't care how long it takes you. This is all we're paying you. So I had to wait 2 days. So that's 2 days of a rental truck. And then when it came out, it was leaking again. So now I either have to go get another rental truck, or I didn't. I took it to my shop and paid them to fix it right, which I should have done the first time.
Yeah, well, I didn't even buy extended warranty on my truck when I got it, because the guy that I bought it through, he says, "You want that extended warranty?" I said, "Well, how much is it?" And he said, "Well, with that big Cummins and everything," he says, "Oh," he said, "you can add it any time in the first year." And he said, "You pay about an extra $500. He said, "But it's like $10,000 for that extended warranty." I said, "Shit, I'll take my chances."
Well,
so I just stuck with the $100,000. And I kept my $10,000.
Exactly.
I told him, I said, any time in that first year, if it becomes a problem, child, I'll add the warranty. Well, it didn't give me any problems, really, in the first year.
Right.
I'm a bit like you. I had two wheel seals, but both because it was piggyback there, and it was the rear axle. I'm guessing when they shoved the axles back in, they're a little bit rough. So I had two wheel seals, and within 80,000 miles, I thought something was wrong with the clutch, and I took it to Peterbilt, and they checked it. No, it's good, it's good, it's good. And then it still, I was convinced there was something wrong with the clutch. And I took it back, and they checked driveline angles, and they pinion angles, everything. They said it was all good. And I said, "Well, something wrong with it." I said, "Pull the transmission out." And he says, "If we pull it out and there's nothing wrong with the clutch," he said, "you'll be stuck with the bill." I said, "Pull it out." So they pulled it out, and the next day he called me. He says, "Yeah, we've got to put a new clutch in your car." Okay, thanks. So I would write, but it's like, well, if they were trying to scare me out of doing it. It's like, well, if we pull it out and we don't find anything, you'll be on the hook for the bill. And I said, "That's fine, pull it out." I said, "I authorize you to pull it out because I'm pretty sure it needs a clutch." So within 80,000 miles, I'd had done two axle seals and the clutch.
Right.
And I think that was the only warranty work I ever had on that truck.
I
kept my $10,000. So.
Now, here's one I will tell you about that was kind of interesting. I had one of my first Series 60s pretty early on. I'm trying to remember. It might have been that truck I bought from Swift. I had one of the strangest things ever happen on that truck. Right, it was like, I had the 500,000-mile warranty on that. Now, I didn't pay for it. I actually bought the truck used early enough that the warranty transferred with it. So I didn't even pay for it. Whoever bought it the first time paid for it. Right at like 507,000 miles, and I hadn't used the warranty at all up until that point, not for a single thing. At 507, I took that truck in. That was the first truck that I put a bypass oil filter on. Now, maybe it wasn't the first. Now, it wasn't the first, but I for some reason, I went to a different shop than my normal shop. I can't remember if they just couldn't get me in or what it was. But it's not that hard to put on an OPS. So I just took it to another shop. They had it for like 3 days. And when I got it back, that truck would use 1 gallon of oil right at 15,000 miles. And we were, you know, getting ready to start extended drains with the OPS on it. When it came out of their shop, it was using a gallon of oil every 2,000 miles. And I thought,
that the one where they...
the only thing that comes to mind for me, because all you're doing is putting an OPS on this thing, and doing an oil change while you're at it. The only thing that came to mind for me is somebody drained the oil and then somebody started it and ran it. Yeah, it's the only thing that made any sense, but how are you ever going to prove that? So here was the interesting thing, though. 7,000 miles past my warranty, not only did Detroit do an in-frame on it for me, they got it done in 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Miracles do happen.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Yeah. I had a great Detroit shop right next to our terminal in Orlando.
Yeah, well, that truck that Mark bought, that's one of the trucks from the carrier that I'm leased to, and they don't pay for it. They make the lease purchase guy pay for the extended warranty, and they get the top-of-the-line warranty, which transfers to the new owner. So Mark got that truck at about 440,000 miles, I think, and then he had a problem with it, and he called the Western Star dealer. "Oh, I'm bringing my truck, and it's warranty." And the guy said, "Yeah, right, whatever." And then when he got there, he's like, "Wow," he says, you do have the really good Premier warranty." He said, "Yeah, it is under warranty." And I think Mark used it twice in that first few months he had it.
Yeah.
So he was lucky, but someone else paid for it.
Yeah,
so
that's even better.
He did good out of it.
Right.
Yeah. So, because all the trucks they buy now, if you want to lease purchase it, they put in the really good, I don't know what it costs, but they put the really good warranty on, and everything is covered in that first 500,000 miles.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So,
all right.
Right. I'll let you get the next man.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to New York. Oh, hold on. Nope. We're going to go to Florida instead. David, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, everybody.
What's on your mind today?
This is for you, Leroy. This is for Leroy. I called the other day. I left him a message, and he never called me back, so I guess he's a busy man. Just because I got a 17 Cummins ISX. I had an 1145 engine code on it, which was showing a number 6 injector.
Okay.
And I replaced the injector, but the code didn't go away. So after 2 or 3 days, I cleared the code one more time, and then the code went away and hasn't come back. So do you think I'm all right now to keep going, or does that injector just take a little while for the ACM to read it and calibrate it and stuff?
I think you sent me a email, right?
No, I left you a voicemail the other day, but you never got back to me. The code's gone right now. It's not showing as active or inactive or anything on my code readers.
What engine is it?
The ISX Cummins 17 model.
Right, let me look that up for you real quick.
Yeah, it was showing the number 6 solenoid.
And roughly what year is it?
17.
17.
We've got radio silence here. I might do a little song and dance.
I was going to say, this is quiet radio here.
Come on, Pete. Let's do a duo.
We can do that. So, you just replaced the cylinder number 6 injector?
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right. And process for clearing. Cha-da-da-da. Yeah, it says, it is necessary for you to use reset all faults command in order to clear that check engine light. So, yeah, you could have replaced it, and it wouldn't have went out unless you hit clear.
Yeah, well, it took me 3 tries to get it clear. It took 3 days for it to clear it for the last time that I actually cleared it, and then it just went away. So I didn't know. I couldn't figure out why it didn't clear right off the bat after I replaced that injector. But
yeah, because you were using some sort of scan to clear, right?
Yeah, I'm using OTR Performance. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the same as Insight or not. It should be, but I would say if you replace the injector, I mean, it's just mechanical not responding, so it's probably just a bad injector.
Okay, all right. Well, that's what I was wondering. I just wanted to make sure, because somebody said it might be the check valve in the end of the rail, or the pressure sensor in the rail or something, and I'm like, well, code's gone, so I'm like, well, I just wanted to make sure I didn't need to change, throw any other parts at it.
Yep, nope, it's just the injector.
Just the injector. Well, all right, then, that makes me feel better. I'll get off of pins and needles for a little while and wait for something else to happen.
There you go.
Wait for the next one.
All right.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to, now we're going to go to New York. Justin, welcome.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Hey, that first caller, or not maybe not the first caller, but about the 871 where he had misfiring and a rough idle. I knew he said he took off a solenoid or whatever. I did this by mistake the other day. There's 2 connectors that are exactly the same, and if you put one in the wrong connector, it does that at an idle. It sounds like fuel knock. So I just figured go back and check, make sure you put the right plug in the solenoid on that Cummins X there.
Yeah, that would be hard to do. Yeah.
Yep, and I didn't realize that they have same connectors so close to each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, usually have different designs for each connector or whatever, but I don't know what they're called, but I removed it, or put it back, or just tried something different, and that's what it was. So,
all right,
just let that one guy. So, all right, you guys have a good day.
Thanks. Let's go to Nevada this time. Nish, welcome.
Well, how you doing, Kevin? Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I just heard you guys have a call last week. We listen a lot, and I've only called in twice. But, on these PACCAR MX-13 motors, I heard him call in, and you guys were talking about what you hated about them.
yeah.
or didn't like or whatever. And I bought this one in 2019, September. And anyways, I was just going to give you some numbers. I know you like numbers.
Sure.
And, and it was right before we started listening to you guys, right before COVID. I might have made a whole different choice. I'm not batting for it or against it. It's been a good truck. I like it. It's not set up proper.
Okay.
I'm too far from my trailer. I don't have the wings on it. It is a 567, so it does have some aerodynamics to it. And I pull a grain hopper, so I'm loaded heavy all the time. So
yeah, okay.
And it's an 18 speed with 322 rears.
Ooh.
It's a 6x4.
Okay.
I do run the wide base tires, and my the maintenance number I give you is going to be skewed a little because this trailer used to eat tires like mad. I mean, I've been through the whole rolling toe.
Yeah.
Tried
okay.
everything I could figure out there, got it aligned perfect, and still would eat the outside or scrub the outside of the tires off. And it's been probably 2 or 3 months ago, maybe a little longer. You talked about having a truck that had the same problem, and I got them 2-inch offsets and how you flip the wheels around.
Right.
So I did the same thing. I thought, I'm going to try it. And I will tell you what, it works. I
Good.
Haven't scrubbed these tires
Good.
Off at all.
Well, yep.
Hopefully that helps with the maintenance numbers.
Yeah.
But anyways, I got into the trucking world, or back into the trucking world. I started trucking at 18. I'm 51. But I got out and raised a family in the coal mines. And I still trucked. I would relief drive for a friend of mine that had a company on my days off.
Okay.
But I made a lot of mistakes starting my business. The first truck I bought, because the war on coal shut us down, so I got
yeah.
back into full-time trucking, and I wanted to be an owner-operator. I didn't want to drive for somebody else and not get home and all these ideas.
Right.
So the first truck I bought was 2012 deleted ISX.
Uh-oh.
389 Peterbilt.
Oh, man.
And it, beautiful truck. It just was. Luckily, I had good finances in place for mining, and I'd save good money. But it at 580,000 miles, that truck just about, it actually came apart. I had liner protrusion at that time, had all kinds of problems. Picked the wrong shop. I mean, you name it.
Okay.
So I have a friend who owns 300 trucks, and he told me next time I was going to buy a truck to buy one of his, not used, but that I could get his fleet discount.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So when I was ready, I called him and I said, I need a new truck. So that's why my truck's spec'd like it is. And it works for him because he does a lot of off-road stuff, and they pull trains in Utah.
Yeah.
Pneumatic
right.
trailers. Right? It's set up for his application, not exactly mine. So he tries to get it somewhere in the middle. But anyways, long story. So, yeah, it's I think I might have said this. It's 6x4 white-based tires, 322 ratio. I'm loaded 84% of the time, 80,000 pounds every load or close to 2. Empty 16%.
Yeah.
I ran this truck. Right now I got 581,000 miles on it. My maintenance cost is sitting right at 13 cents a mile.
Oh, that is.
Truck,
that's really good.
That's truck, trailer.
Honestly, I'm going to make a comment that might be a little on the low side.
Well, but I do a lot of maintenance myself.
Okay.
And I'll
take that statement back. If you're doing a lot of your own maintenance, this is an outstanding number. Really, you're not going to get it any better than that.
Yeah. So I use the max mileage I have since about 100,000 miles. Like I said, we started listening to you really heavy right before I bought, or right when I bought this truck, or I might have done something a little different. My average speed, honestly, we probably run about 65, but there's times that we're in the right lane. We run the same lanes all the time that I have to push it just to make
yeah.
it that.
Yep.
Help my broker. I fell in with one set of brokers, followed your advice on everything. But anyways, this truck's averaging 6.7 miles a gallon on my IFTA.
Here's with that maintenance cost and a reasonably good, I mean, we could do better on fuel economy, but you do have an operation. We're not going to get 9, no matter what we do in that kind of an operation. We could probably get 8 if we really tried. But overall, this truck's been pretty good to you. I mean, I would have done something different, but this has not, there's nothing about this truck that would put you out of business.
not at all. And our, you know, we did good last year. I think it is, like you said, having the right relationships with the right brokers. I just love them. I mean, I just ain't
gonna, good.
I don't want to chase myself, but our every mile last year was $2.78.
That's oh, nice.
Everything.
Nice.
Yeah, that's... And our gross, we spent a lot of time at the house. Our gross was $3.25. You know, so
good numbers. Congratulations.
Well, not bad. But here's the interesting thing. So I started changing my own oil all the time because we couldn't find a good shop, you know, for a long time out on the road. I mean, you'd pull in to get an oil change, and one of the shops even told me it'll be 2 weeks. You got to leave your truck here. Yeah, I had it changed in Wyoming one time, and they pulled the wrong plug on this packed car. And I'm like, why did they only put in 10 gallons of oil? Because this one holds 11, you know, and that's what they billed me for. And I got looking, and I could see where he took one of the side plugs out instead of the bottom plug on it.
Unbelievable.
Just things like that. And then about 2 months, so this is something I want to share with these guys, too, a little bit. But it's been 2 months ago, I was coming across I-70. We live down there around Moab. I was born and raised in Moab. But anyways, I was loaded coming across I-70 and started pulling the swell right out of Green River, that big steep hill. And man, I was passing the truck, got around him, went to split a gear down, and it sounded like the whole world was coming apart. So I pulled to the shoulder, got towed back to Grand Junction, Fruta. And I'll tell you guys, you know, if people are looking for a really good Peterbilt shop, that's who I use. Dan there is awesome. I asked if I could share his name on here.
Good.
He really, really works with owner operators. He's their maintenance superintendent or maintenance manager, I guess you'd call him. But yeah, he listens to you guys on the Power Hour to learn stuff too, so it's pretty cool.
Oh yeah,
but,
love that.
Yeah, but we got in there and they start tearing this motor apart, and we 570,000 miles. We had to go in and do we actually did an out-of-frame. They had full motor and transmission, and it was all from an oil change and not mine. So what they ended up finding was my number six piston cooler, or number five, excuse me, piston cooler, was plugged with a blue shop towel that had gotten that motor. And he said it probably set in the bottom by your, you know, by your oil filter, because these new motors, they have the cap that comes off and then just the filter element goes inside instead of like the old ones that twist down from the bottom.
Right.
And he said it probably got down in your oil gallery or whatever. And it was really cold that morning when we took off, and I started my truck, let it idle, warm up. I had it plugged in at the house, but still it was super cold. And he says your oil may have been thick. It finally just pushed it in there, and we could smell. It smelled like raw fuel, you know, coming out from underneath my hood, and I couldn't find nothing, And yeah, then we lost that motor. But yeah, they had me in and out of there in a month. And there are some things about the pack car that just sucks. The reason they had to do an out of frame is because, like you guys were talking, the camshaft goes in from the backside, and since we were touring that far to it and going to spend that much money, and the truck don't pay off, I mean, it pays off this October, I'm like, we might as well check it and do everything right, because I know they're having that camshaft problem. And so they pulled it all. Cummins actually covered that part, covered that part of pulling the motor and transmission, because they did find, you know, that I had some problems on that camshaft, which they knew about, and they've extended our warranty from 500,000 to 700,000 just because they knew they were having this issue. So they did cover pulling the motor out, the new camshaft, everything that would have been involved in that. So, and I, like I said, I'm not going one way for it or against it. It's been a good truck for us. I really like driving the motor, you know.
It's possible that this thing will become a better platform here as we get to know it better. Right now, it's just too inconsistent for me, and I don't see really great numbers out of any of them. You know, occasionally I'll find one like yours. Great numbers on maintenance, fuel mileage, respectable, but nothing to get too excited about. That's kind of what most of them turn out to be, or they just turn out to be a problem. I mean, I'm not seeing a bunch of them that I get really excited about the numbers, but for you and your operation, this has been a good truck for you.
It's been a good truck, but I did get the opportunity while this thing was down to drive a Penske rental truck, which was geared a little different than ours. It's a Freightliner. That's the first automated transmission I've ever drove.
Okay.
And it was my next one will definitely have an automated transmission in it. I kind of liked it.
You know, we could argue or fight about these all day. I had my first one in, what year was that truck? 99? 2001. Yep. Maybe 01 was the first one I had. You know, that whole thing about, oh, if you're not shifting, you're not a real driver, all that stuff. We just throw that nonsense out the window. The new automated transmissions have become very, very efficient. Look, when I was pulling, you know, our trailer around with the gliders we were building, I enjoy shifting. I mean, it was fun. But honestly, if I had to do this every day, I'd much rather have the auto shift. Now, how many times in that first week did you slam your foot down to the floor looking for a clutch as you were coming to a stop?
Well, I did that a few times, but the worst part is I got back in this pack car, and the worst part is I'll pull up to a stop sign or wait for it to jake for me, and I got to remember I got to do that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I'll tell you the worst combination I had. There was a time where I had three trucks. One was a manual, one was a three-pedal auto shift where you still had a clutch, and one was a two-pedal auto shift. And I was the spare driver. You know, I had three full-time drivers, and I would fill in for them. And one of them took off every Friday, so I would work every Friday for him. But bouncing back and forth between those three trucks would make you crazy. And the worst one was when I would get into the three-pedal auto shift, because you'd remember it was an auto shift, but you'd forget that you had to push in the clutch. And I'd come to an intersection, and I'd have my foot on the brake, and at the last minute, you realize it's not going to stop. And I almost hit a couple people several times.
I got to drive one of them one time. I was driving for Giant down in out of Flagstaff, Arizona, hauling fuel, and my truck was getting an oil change. And yeah, I went to hop in one, and luckily the driver that drove it there was, you know, I didn't know what to do. I didn't see the big D handle. I don't know. So I got to drive that one. I really liked that truck, you know, because you did have the clutch. So it was kind of cool, but man, this new auto shift. There was one thing that scared the heck out of me on it, which I'll talk about that, but I couldn't believe how smooth and how fast it shifted. It like you're not gaining speed as fast. That is bull. We kind of timed it here. It just shifts low and it stays low, and you really gain your speed every bit as fast, I'd say.
It's actually a little faster, but it doesn't feel like it because it's so smooth.
Yep. But the first time I hit that jake, it did scare me to death, because I think, and maybe you can answer this or the guys can, but you know, these jakes have low, well, like mine's one head, two head, three heads when you pull it down, you know, on the column. I don't know if them are the same or not, but I actually watched some YouTube videos to try to figure it out. And they just call it high, medium, and low. But, man, that Detroit, and it had the that 15-liter Detroit in it. It was a 2022 truck. And it was tall. You know, it had the big sleeper where I got the mid-roof. But same trailer, way closer to my truck. I thought I'd really do way better in fuel mileage than I did with that thing. But anyway, the first time I did hit that high jake, I was just bobtail. And, you know, just coming in, and I just trying to figure the truck out. I was going to take my trailer up to Peterbilt. That thing jumps right up to 2,300 RPMs. And, I mean, it just, I wasn't used to that. I thought, oh, man. And I hurried up, reached over, and shut it off, and then... And that's where they say it's okay.
So yeah.
I didn't want to talk about it. Wow. You know, so I watched some videos, and I called some friends that drive, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's how they work. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They had the manual blocked out on that, you know, but the jake was really good on that Detroit. I was surprised. I had it for a month, and we were in some snowy conditions, stuff like that. And on it, I tracked it real close, and for all miles, I'd set right at 6.1. But we did have to idle that too at night, because not every night, but if it's real cold,
right?
Because I was afraid the battery could go dead. I didn't know enough about the truck, and it didn't have an APU or nothing on it. Anyways, just thought I'd share some numbers with you guys.
I appreciate it.
You guys make some choices.
Yep. All right. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Rob, welcome. Oh, let me hit the button. There we go. Rob?
Hey, guys.
Hey there.
Hey, guys. I'm here. I got a question for you. I currently have a 12.7, and it's got a DDEC 3 ECM, and I got the, I think it's code 53, the EEPROM memory. So I got to get that repaired because I've been driving it for about a year like just now, and it's only a matter of time before I'm sitting on the side of the road. But I have a DDEC 4 ECM that I took off of another engine that I had. Now, the problem with that one is I pulled the back. It stopped working. I pulled the back off of it, and the battery exploded. So I actually sent that to you guys. You should have it now. I just sent it out on, like, Friday. I'm right in Baltimore, so I'm sure you probably got it by now. But I'm in the area in Pennsylvania, and I want to know if I can swing past later today and you guys can pull the calibration and settings out of this truck to go into that ECM once you repair it, if you can.
We probably have time for that. I'm not sure exactly what's going on in the shop. I've been out in a test drive and working on other stuff. But, yeah, you could probably swing by. What time are you thinking?
I'm going to be down in New Kensington at 1:30. Got to get unloaded, so I'll probably be to you guys probably around, like, 3.
Yeah, I mean, we got to go home at 3:30. But if we're just pulling just the calibration out, that won't take long. So 3 o'clock is fine.
Okay. All right. And so can you usually repair those when the battery explodes in it?
Depends. Sometimes not. Just depends on the extent of the damage.
Okay. And I got another question, too. So this truck, somebody did a tune on it, and I don't like it. I want to go back to just the stock Detroit calibration for the serial number for this engine. Do you guys have access to, you know, get the Detroit stock calibrations that go in this engine?
Yeah, we can put a stock one back in it.
Okay. All right. I answered all my questions. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Texas. Charles, welcome to the program.
How's it going?
Good, except I just opened up this oil sample you sent me. What the hell is this mess? My God.
the black line, that was somebody else's oil sample. It was not mine.
Okay, so well, even without the black line, we have got some bizarre stuff going on here. What
well,
is with this
yeah,
thing?
I know.
Okay.
I've sent you every one of my oil samples, you know, so, you know, basically it's been doing okay.
Pete, do you have this one?
I do. I'm looking as we speak.
So first off,
I spoke with Pete about it once when I first got the sample back, and we figured out that one line was not mine.
Okay, so we're not looking at that. So here's something a little odd. If we go back to that's number 5. So October of 2022. Your silicon was at 13. We would expect that to start causing some wear metals. Now it's at 16, and your wear metals really aren't high at all. So that could tell us that this isn't silicon the dirt. This is silicon from a chemical somewhere. So that might be a false reading, since we're not really seeing any wear metals whatsoever.
All right. Well, I'm a chemical tanker driver, so I don't know. Maybe I'm picking up chemicals some of the places
I
go to. You know,
Now, that would explain the next thing I was going to address, which your potassium was flagged at a level 4, but there's no sodium.
Right.
So it's not coolant.
Right.
It's probably some chemical you're picking up from the places you go to, so we can ignore that one. So far, even though, you know, silicon looked bad, potassium looks bad, we can just ignore all that. Now we can drop down to the bottom here. No real fuel dilution, soot's pretty low. Viscosity is just fine. Actually, viscosity might be a little high. That could be the
On that sample, I added a bottle of the
Lucas
base.
Well, base won't raise your viscosity, though.
Well, maybe okay. Then,
so
I don't know. It's because I'm always using the same oil, from our shop.
It could be that. Well, there are things that can raise viscosity, and that's why we pay attention to this. It could be the potassium. when you get full-blown coolant in an engine, it will raise the viscosity. Maybe just potassium would by itself. It's not horrible. It's just a little high. More concerning is why this engine is using so much base. I mean, it doesn't look like you've ever been able to keep base in this engine.
Yeah, that's something that you've always commented on ever since I've taken samples. And
so here's
I don't understand it either.
Here's what depletes our base. Acid buildup in the engine. Acid buildup usually comes from poor combustion. So when we see an engine that just won't keep base in it, we're usually looking at a tuning issue, timing, possibly airflow. We're looking at why is this engine producing so much acid, and it's typically poor combustion. So we start looking at all the reasons we might get poor combustion. I would keep looking because you are still just depleting your base pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And we don't normally see with the ISX engines.
Right.
Yeah.
Base issues. It's not like that.
Well, it actually runs really good.
Let me ask you this. There's one more thing to address. Is this engine running really hot?
No. Not at all.
What's your oil temperature? Do you have an oil temperature gauge on this?
I do. I've got all the gauges here.
What's your oil temperature?
I mean, it always runs normal. I mean, I've got the digital gauges. I got to switch back and forth. But like right now, I'm in Texas driving east. My oil temp is at 220.
What's your water temp?
My water temp is about 190.
Okay, so those are perfectly normal. Nothing wrong with those. One of the things we do find in the ISX more often, the ISX is more likely to have hot spots where, you know, your gauge numbers are running just fine, but somewhere in that engine we're overheating the oil. And that's usually what causes this kind of oxidation.
Okay.
Pete, any thoughts? I mean, just burning through the base, high oxidation. I'm not even sure where to start.
Yeah, this is really an unusual sample for sure.
Yeah.
We're not seeing soot. We're not seeing water, which would explain base, that there is water in there.
Right.
We're not seeing that. The soot's good. It's clean.
Yeah.
And again, gasoline without sodium. How often do we see that? We just don't see that.
It's pretty rare. We tend to see it more in the wintertime and in your part of the world where they use salt-based stuff on the road. Most of the stuff they put on the road is either a sodium base or a potassium base. So you can get this a lot in the wintertime. Well, but when I hear chemical hauler, then that usually explains where this is coming from.
Okay, and I go all over the United States, but my main lane that I've run is from down in Houston, Texas, up the Chicago area, and up around Chicago a lot, including the winter.
Right, so a lot of salt. So it's the base and the oxidation just seem odd to me. I you're just going to have to start. When was the last time the overhead was set?
I had it done at Pittsburgh Power about 200,000 miles ago.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a little bit more.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
Let's start there. Get back to Pittsburgh Power. Let them reset the overhead. And then just, talk to them about this oil sample so they can look at things like intake air. You know, do we have any big exhaust restrictions somewhere?
Right.
But let's start with that overhead.
All right.
And what are you thought about seeing brands of oil?
That's an idea, too.
I remember you mentioned that. You mentioned it when we were talking, and my company always uses the same oil, for all of our trucks. And I mean, I could go and buy some oil and have them put it in, but it's just always been easier to just let them put the same stuff they've been putting in it.
I'm with Pete. On this oil change, I would try something different. What oil do they use?
I can do it. Delco.
If I were you on this oil change, I would put in a standard conventional 1540 Rotella.
Okay. And we can try that.
Yeah, I would set the overhead first before we did the oil change. I would set the overhead, I would do an oil change, and I'd just put some standard basic Rotella in here.
Okay.
And then let's look at another sample and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right. We're going to wrap this up for today. Anybody have anything they want to close with?
So other than this oil change, I've seen this more so. One of our customers had a DD15 that had 8-plus miles to the gallon, no issues. The truck ran great. Oil analysis was good other than the base was dropped out. And they tried a couple different oils, and they found one where the base kept up with it.
Yeah.
So, again, let's just see if it makes a difference.
And here's the thing about that. We've talked about this in the past. Every now and then we find a truck with a weird oil sample issue. And you do it, I do it. We always say, look, for the fun of it, let's just try a different oil because we're not sure what's going on. Let's try this. And a lot of I won't say a lot of times. Sometimes it does change things. But there's never any consistency about it. Like one time I could say, well, the truck was running Rotella and we were getting weird numbers. And we put in Dello and it's working fine. Or the next truck might come in like this one. It's got Dello and you got weird numbers. You put in Rotella and it's fine. I can't mm-hmm. say that there's one oil that never gives us issues like this. It seems to just be some trucks like one oil better and some trucks like a different oil better. Most trucks, for the most part, you can't tell the difference. If you put in any oil that has the right API classification, they all perform about the same. But every once in a while, we get these trucks that just like one brand of oil better.
Hmm? Yeah, we've seen it, and like I said, no rhyme or reason to
right.
it either.
Right. So, this one will be interesting. I think that overhead may be an issue. You guys might find something else as you're looking in there, but be interesting to see what happens with this. All right, before we wrap this up, I am probably going to be doing a space today, an X space at noon, which is noon. No, wait a minute. 10, 1 o'clock Eastern time. I should just use my time because it's easier. We're coming up on 10. I'll be doing it at 11 Pacific time. And I'm going to, we'll start with this idea of these two owner-operator groups that actually want to see a guaranteed minimum freight rate. Holy cow. That should be a good space, especially if they decide to stop in. Then the fireworks will fly. We'll see how that goes. And who knows where the space may go. It may turn into a free-for-all. So if you are on X, if you're not on X, you should go join and then go follow me. On X here in the next probably half hour, I will schedule that so you can see it. Then we will probably launch that space at 11 Pacific time. I am going to try to also live stream that space over our app. So if you're driving today and you don't have time to get on the space itself on X, there's a good chance it will be on the app. When I say I have to try, it's because I haven't done a space in over a month, and we've changed equipment and all kinds of weird stuff, and spaces changes all the time. I haven't hosted one in a while, and it takes some magic to make it live streamed on our app. So I'm not positive I can pull off the live stream, but I will try. So later on today, in about an hour or so, you may hear that live stream on the app itself. All right. Thanks to the team from Pittsburgh Power. We'll do it again next week. If you have any questions between now and then, give them a call. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.